And welcome to the opening bell. My name's Matt Christie. Again, I'm with John Dennan.
Hello.
Packed weekend of action last weekend.
It was good.
And you were...
I was in the thick of it.
You were lucky enough to be in arguably the best city in Europe. You were in Birmingham.
I was in Birmingham.
It is a wonderful place.
Is it even arguable that it's the best city in Europe?
What? Certainty?
Yeah.
Without question. Yeah. Without question. Where do you think it ranks in the world, best cities? Top five?
It's somewhere between New York and Ulaanbaatar. Somewhere on that spectrum.
Yeah, anyway, there was a lot of action in Birmingham. It was all fairly one-sided stuff, wasn't it, John? What did you make of it all? I loved the opening paragraph to your ringside report.
It was one-sided, yes. And yeah, we knew it was sort of going to be one-sided going into it. But I suppose, or maybe it's a guilty pleasure, but they did take care of their opposition in such good style. It was never sort of dull.
Yes.
So you can't really rave about the show because... You know, the British prospects and Macklin all won absolutely convincingly. But, you know, I thought Joshua actually looked very impressive. Even, you know, Zimbano Love, you know, wasn't amazing. We all knew Joshua, we all thoroughly expected Joshua to knock him out. But he did it very well, very assured. Callum Smith looked absolutely devastating.
Yeah.
You know, and Oleg Fedotov's, he's gone a few rounds with some decent people. I glanced at his record and he'd sort of gone six rounds with Stefan Hartel, who's a solid German prospect. Kalia Fai just detonated an excellent left hook to destroy Isaac Quay. So it was the way they were beating their opponents that was so impressive. And of course, Luke Campbell. Looked classy as ever as well.
There was some criticism though, you kind of touched on it there, and you can understand the criticism, can't you, in that there wasn't one fight on there where there was any question beforehand about who the winner was. It's not great when it's like a top level show that's on television on a Saturday night. It's a bit of a shame, really, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I suppose in terms of the TV show, the TV program, Birmingham was like almost the warm up for, or should have been the warm up for the tough fights in Texas that had Brits in them as well. That was sort of wrapped into the same program. You know, yeah, as a live event, it didn't have the sort of sporting the drama you want from a sporting event because. You pretty much knew who was going to win. It was more a case of how they were going to do it. But it wasn't, I was never bored. It wasn't a bad sort of live event, so I didn't feel like it was a waste of time.
Just talk briefly about Joshua. You said you was impressed. Now, next up is Kevin Johnson.
Yeah.
There's some talk that Rafael Love or Rafael Zimbano Love or whatever had been the full distance with Shannon Briggs recently. He'd taken, who was it? He took somebody 10 rounds, didn't he?
Well, he lost to Shannon Briggs, which isn't exactly great, but he had, I think, gone the distance with Charles Martin, who's an American heavyweight.
I think he stopped him in the 10th.
Yeah, and also this guy who's just about to, the guy fighting the WBC heavyweight champion next, the guy who's fighting Deontay Wilder, Eric Molina, he stopped Zimbano Love in 8 rounds. So it's a point of comparison.
Yeah.
You know.
But Love was not a step up from anyone that Joshua was facing.
No,
recently.
I think back to last year has definitely been the best he's faced.
Joshua moves up against Kevin Johnson. Is Love the last time we see Joshua at that level? Presuming he gets past Johnson, then it's onwards and upwards, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, because they've just said he might be on the show in Manchester, because I do think Kevin Johnson is a good fighter for him at this stage, and I think the plan could quite possibly be in September to see him in with, you know, a British rival like Dillian White. I don't know how Derek Chisora would fit in the mix. David Price is going to be back on Sky, so I think towards the end of this year we're going to see him in with the likes of Dillian White and maybe David Price, which is getting a step up between Kevin Johnson and getting there. We may see another fight like this, you know, if he's on the undercard in Manchester, where it's got you know, a couple of, you know, actually quite a few good significant fights, we could see another of these type of things.
Kevin Johnson is in the country, he's in Manchester, I believe, preparing for Anthony Joshua. Johnson always talks a good game. I remember going back, and I think it was it 2008 when he fought Vitaly Klitschko, could have been 2009. And I liked the look of Kevin Johnson prior to that. Nice boxer, quite talented, and he just went into his shell against Klitschko. However, he went 12 rounds since then. He's been the full distance again after giving it the big end beforehand, with Tyson Fury and Derek Chisora. So he's a good opponent type. He's durable. However, how much of a threat does he actually pose to get the victory over Joshua?
I don't know, because on the face of it, you'd think this is no threat. He's safe, as in he's not going to win, but he is very durable, so he's most likely to give Joshua rounds. You know, and if Vitaly Klitschko didn't stop him, you're not going to expect Anthony Joshua to stop him, you know, in his 12th or 13th fight. But you just, you know, you don't know, because Joshua's never been beyond three rounds. You don't know if, you know, you might, you know, you could make him look bad if Anthony sort of follows him around the ring and Kevin Johnson messes him around. You know, I don't think Joshua's stamina is going to fade in the later rounds, and that he's suddenly going to be exhausted and then vulnerable, and then Johnson could well be a threat. I don't think that's going to happen, but, you know, it could. He's never been beyond three.
I think that's why I really I do like this matchup, Johnson Joshua, for that reason. And I think probably that Joshua might well be the first one to stop him, but if not, there will be those question marks, because as you just said, we just don't know what's going to happen to Anthony Joshua. And in all, I mean, probably nothing at all. He'll probably be fine if he's forced to go. Was it scheduled for 10?
Yeah, maybe scheduled for 10.
So, you know, he might be fine, but at the same time, we've seen this before. I mean, you look back to Frank Bruno, 1984, I believe, when he was kind of on a massive, massive unbeaten streak. James Bone Crusher Smith comes over from America. Bruno's winning every round. It's a bit of a scrappy fight. In 10th round, Bone Crusher Smith knocks out an exhausted Frank Bruno. I'm not for one second, please let me make it clear, I do not think that is going to happen this time. But nobody thought that was going to happen to Frank Bruno against an unknown Bone Crusher Smith. So it is always interesting. I think it's a vital step for Kevin Johnson. For Anthony Joshua. One of the things that came out, of course, bit of fallout from Saturday night, was the fact that Sky viewers who were hoping to see Jamie McDonald live didn't.
Yeah.
They saw Ricky Burns turn in a wonderful performance, and he was unlucky, I thought, against Omar Figueroa. But Jamie McDonald's fight, we didn't see it until after we already knew the result, because Sky stayed in Birmingham with Anthony Joshua. I mentioned it a bit in this week's column. You can understand, I mean, we don't know what was going on. First of all, we don't know what was going on behind the scenes with Sky. I'm pretty sure that their intention beforehand was to show both fights live. Circumstances went against them. But you can understand why. I mean, you've experienced Anthony Joshua from the very start of his career, you know, professional and amateur career. You're aware of how much he's grown, both as a talent and a personality, and there can be little denying, absolutely no offence at all to Jamie McDonald, that Anthony Joshua is the bigger name. You can understand why.
Well, he has those factors in his favour, in that, you know, the Olympics, especially a home Olympics, that's a huge platform for him. You know, it's a huge platform for all of it, you know, for these Olympians like Luke Campbell, as it was for, you know, isn't that why Oscar De La Hoya became so famous? Because he was coming off the Olympics. So that is a factor in why he's such a big name. And he's a heavyweight who knocks people out that people like to see.
And that is the sad fact of it. And often, I mean, we have got an absolutely glorious, wonderful sport. And the likes of Jamie McDonald are an absolute credit to it.
Yeah.
But sadly, one of the facts of the game is that people like Anthony Joshua are what draw in casual fans and appeals to kind of your average Joe on the street who wants to see a big guy knock out another big guy.
Yeah.
And you know, it's you can understand it. However, it was so tough on Jamie McDonald. I mean, what he's been through since he moved onto the world scene and won the title, then had the title stripped from him. He's since kind of worked his way back, and he's got a diluted version of the WBA. The WBA title, but he went over to Texas and he wasn't expected to win. And what a performance, John.
Yeah, that's really is his like most significant win, isn't it? He wasn't expected to win by everyone except Paul Wheeler, who did the preview in the magazine.
Exactly, yeah. I remember
Wheelie knows.
We were out in Las Vegas when Paul was writing that.
Yeah.
And
we tried to dissuade him.
I remember thinking, well, that's a brave pick, but yeah, no, we Boxing News as a brand picked McDonald to do it.
Yeah. But yeah, I thought beating Kamida in Texas, given Kamida's sort of, he's Japanese, but he's an adopted Mexican.
Yeah.
So I thought that was going to be, you know, what a great performance to win. And what next for Jamie McDonald? Because that's the hard thing. It's harder at bantamweight to think of, like, you know, what are the big fights.
Yeah, well, I think there's some talk of him moving up to super bantamweight, isn't there? Which kind of makes sense, certainly financially, and it makes sense because we've got a wonderful thing going on at super bantamweight with Frampton, Quigg, also Rigondo's up there as well.
And Jamie McDonald, Scott Quigg, both of the same promoter.
Makes sense, doesn't it?
You know, Matrimon, sort of, they aren't... as of Saturday, immediately after his Jamie McDonald's victory, Matrimon, no plans in the works to sort of make McDonald Quigg, but it's sort of that fight is on the radar now. Obviously Scott Quigg's got Kiko Martinez coming up in Manchester in July.
Quick nod to David Caldwell, who kind of stepped in as McDonald's trainer. So it was a good, you know, kind of a bittersweet kind of triumph for them both. But what chance would you give McDonald against the likes of Quigg and against the likes of Frampton? Let's be realistic and take Rigondo out of it for now. What chance do you give McDonald?
I think he would be an underdog, but you got to think, especially after that win against Kamida, he's got, you know, he does have the sort of talent to make it things difficult for anyone. McDonald, Quigg, I think Quigg, you know, he's big as well for super bantamweight. You'd have Quigg a big favourite, wouldn't you?
Well, it's an intriguing fight, though, isn't it?
Yeah, and he wouldn't, like, blast through Jamie McDonald, would he? McDonald's tough. It's intriguing, but I do think Quigg and Frampton, you know, obviously behind Rigondo, were the sort of best super bantamweights in the world.
Okay, let's move on. Also out in Texas was Ricky Burns again. I think more so even than McDonald, Burns was very much thought to be going out there to be kind of cannon fodder for Figueroa, the favourite. Burns had been in almost free fall since 2013, really, when he was still WBO lightweight champion. A couple of tricky defences, one against, was particularly controversial, was against Ray Beltran, where he appeared, let's say, fortunate to get a share of the spoils there. Since then he lost to Terence Crawford. And he's lost to
Dejan Zlatikanin. Because Crawford is exceptional.
Yeah.
Zlatikanin. Ricky Burns really should have. You know, he's, even the way he was winning that fight, he was just sort of going straight in, swinging in big punches. You know, and Burns was just sort of leaning back, but there to be hit, and he just, you know, at his best. Ricky Burns shouldn't have lost to Zlatikanin.
So, but it was understandable why Burns had been written off, really.
Yeah, after that defeat.
But he kind of reinvigorated himself to an extent. It's a shame he didn't get the win. The scores, for me, were too wide. Burns got 2 points deducted as well, which seemed exceptionally harsh on the Scott.
Yeah, he was really up against it, wasn't he? Even the referee was...
Well, it was almost because, you know, the Jamie McDonald fight was so nip and tuck, so tight. Could have made an argument for it being a draw, for it being a tight win for Kamida, for being a tight win for McDonald. McDonald got it on all three cards, and it was as if he'd kind of taken all any bit of luck from the British fighters in that fight, and Burns was left with absolutely none, and he was really up against it. But where can Burns? I mean, Burns has been has always said, I mean, even prior to this fight, that he's got absolutely no desire to retire. He absolutely loves it, which was a bit worrying really before this performance.
Yeah, after the last couple, you were worried, and then you know we'd seen about his sort of financial situation, so he kind of needed to earn money. So you're thinking this could be a very unhappy story, but the fact that he could be competitive with Figueroa up. You know, I think Figueroa was overweight for even moving up in the division. So I think if Ricky Burns can come back to lightweight, he's got, you know, I don't know how many years he's got left, but he certainly has shown he can still mix with top class guys. And in Britain, there are a lot of very good lightweights. There are actually a lot of good fights around.
Do you think that's what he should be aiming at? Is back at domestic level against some of the top British lightweights, or? Is he better off targeting guys like Figueroa? The danger, I guess, is if he fights guys like Figueroa and he fights people away from home, is that he could become almost like a gatekeeper, which you could almost argue he is now.
Yeah.
At a world level gatekeeper.
I mean, if you look at the way he struggled stepping down to Zlatan Kanin, and then the journeymen he fought after that were like two of his worst performances. That would suggest he sort of should, you know, that's, you know, stepping down levels, you know, is difficult. It doesn't really work. So maybe he should stay at world level. It would just be good to see, like, we've got Brits fighting for British lightweights fighting for world titles. It'd be nice to see that sort of wave of fighters come up to world level to join Burns.
Yeah, it would be good. I think Burns, like you say there, exactly as you say there, he thrives being the underdog a bit, thrives when people think that he can't do. I mean, you look back at him at world level, and you know, the Roman Martinez fight was wonderful, one of the best fights I've been lucky enough to be ringside for, and then he went on, and I think you would probably single out performances against the likes of Michael Katsidas, when Katsidas was still pretty useful, and Kevin Mitchell, and these are fights where not everybody was expecting him to win, certainly against Martinez and Katsidas. I think it's fair to say that the minority were expecting him to win. So perhaps there is life in old Ricky Burns yet.
Yeah, I'm just not sure what the next fight for him, or what would be a good next fight for him.
Well, we'll wait and see. There may not be life though in Felix Sturm, who lost to Fyodor Chudinov in Germany at the weekend. Long old career for Felix Sturm. Is there any way back from this setback, do you think?
You just feel like age and wear and tear are catching up with Felix Sturm. Like, he was excellent against Aaron Barker. Was that the end of...
That was the end of 2013.
End of 2013. That seems to have been his sort of last... I mean, it didn't last very long, but that was his sort of last good performance, really. If he's just not throwing enough punches, I don't know where he goes from here. But this Chudinov is like the good one of the Chudinov brothers. Like, he's not bad.
Where does Chudinov fit into this? I mean, this was for the vacant WBA regular super middleweight title that had been stripped from Karl Froch. Where does Chudinov fit in the super middleweight mix? I mean, we've got Andre Ward coming back, Karl Froch's future very much uncertain, James DeGale going for a world title, George Groves just kind of waiting around for Badu Jack, it seems. Where does Chudinov fit in amongst those guys?
It's hard because there's sort of a logjam for the world title fights, isn't there? Like, George Groves is going to be fighting Badu Jack eventually, you know, maybe in the second half, you know, later on this year.
Yeah.
Cameron Smith is fighting Christopher Brass in Liverpool in June, which is actually a good fight.
It is a good fight.
And if he wins that will put him right up the WBC rankings. So we could probably see him versus the winner of Groves, Jack. So that's the sort of WBC route taken care of. DeGale's got to fight Andre Durrell. So it's hard to know. That's a hard fight to predict. But then if DeGale wins it, you don't think Fedor Tyudinov is like, you know, there's so many more exciting fights you can make. Andre Ward is going to have to fight somewhat a bigger name than Fedor Tyudinov, surely. So I guess it's probably going to be a while before Tyudinov gets himself in the mix for a significant fight, unless goes back to Germany to fight Arthur Abraham, the WBO champion.
What, Tyudinov?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I suppose at least he'll be well known in Germany. But then Abraham's fighting Stieglitz again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know.
Felix Sturm, say, retires now. Let's just say, for argument's sake, that's what happens. Does he ever make it into the Hall of Fame, Felix Sturm?
I don't know. If they had one in Germany, he would, because he's really popular there, isn't he? But I suppose the sort of global perception of him would be someone who, after his sort of controversial loss to De La Hoya, didn't really want to box outside of his home country again, which is hard to sort of boost your profile worldwide. So probably not.
Solid world level performer. They're one of the most consistent, yeah, consistent. Over the last 10 years.
Yeah, very long reigning, yeah, world champion. If, yeah, you add in his sort of different,
yeah,
eras holding titles.
Okay, let's. Oh, quick mention. Did you see the Buglione Lee Markham fight?
I was in Birmingham, I'm afraid. You put me on the spot here, Matt.
Sorry, no, it was a cracking fight. Buglione, though, I mean, this could have gone either way. Draw looked spot on to me. Buglione, without question, is one of the most exciting fighters in Britain. It looks like a stretch now that he's going to get to world level, be a force at world level.
It's hard to write anyone off. But at the moment, he's getting hit too much.
Yeah. Should it be an issue, though, that he's not going to... I mean, there's been plenty of fighters in the past in Britain's boxing history where they have been crowd pleasers and they've been absolute national heroes, but, yeah, they never quite made it to world level. Should it be an issue for Buglione if he doesn't, but if he still is in all these great fights, he's entertaining the crowds... he's bringing the spectators in, because ultimately that's what we want.
Yeah, I think we should celebrate someone who just, you know, stages these wars for us, who's sort of guaranteed entertainment, you know, whether he becomes a bit of a sort of British cult hero. There's no shame in that, and, you know, you never know. He's going to be in these wars, but he can punch, and he's got heart. And, you know, he doesn't have a bad chin, it's just his...
No, no, not at
just
all.
Let it get hit too much. And so you could see, you know, you could see him winning, you know, there's some good middleweights there's good super middleweights out there, so it might be hard to get to the British title, but not impossible, or he could win a European title, and then suddenly who knows
what happens, yeah,
the wars he's sort of already had are a sign that it's going to be a struggle to move further up the ladder, but that doesn't mean he's not going to be in great fights.
He'll certainly be in demand. Be in demand. Let's move on to
There was Canelo at the weekend.
Oh, sugar! Yeah, we haven't covered Canelo, have we?
Don't say that. Just say we're saving the best till last.
I completely forgot. That was a heck of a fight, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Not quite. Okay, it was over in three rounds. It wasn't quite Hagler-Hearns three rounds, but Kirkland came along, gave Alvarez maybe not sticky moments, but he gave it a go in the.
It's more he was sort of getting in his face, throwing punches. But he never. I mean, I thought Alvarez not only looked like he could take what was coming his way, but it looked absolutely devastating when he let his hands go.
Against someone like Kirkland, who was a little bit clumsy, perhaps.
Yeah, and also he was right there, not getting out of the way.
Alvarez looks absolutely red hot, doesn't he?
Yeah, with that kind of opponent.
Against that kind of opponent.
Yeah.
And full credit to what he's done. I think you and I were talking about it in the office the other day about the fact that Alvarez, he was, he perhaps perhaps outclassed is too strong a word, but he was handily beaten by Floyd Mayweather.
I think from Mayweather showed he was just a level above.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, people knock Floyd Mayweather, and it seems to be the fashionable thing to do is to kind of say that Floyd Mayweather is not all that and everything else. But I mean, depending what Alvarez goes on to do, people may look back on that win over Alvarez because, okay, that ludicrous drawn card aside, he dominated Saul Alvarez. And if Alvarez goes on to, say, win a title at middleweight and is quite dominating, then people may appreciate that performance.
Yeah, that result, I suspect, will become better in hindsight.
But Alvarez, he didn't go back and he didn't drop too far down the world pecking order into when he was looking for his next opponents. Angulo, he fought when Angulo is still deemed to be dangerous. Perhaps hindsight tells us that he was damaged goods already at that point. Yeah. However, then he went straight in with Aristandi Lara, and yeah, fair, that shows his balls, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That shows what he's about, that he kind of sought out that fight.
Yeah, exactly, because like, I thought Angulo was probably just the right style for Alvarez, but Aristandi Lara, a sort of mobile slick counterpuncher, is probably the last thing you need after you've been handily beaten by Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah.
You know, and so it was, you know, it was a good competitive fight. Because I think at the time some people maybe thought, did some people think Lara was unlucky? I didn't. I thought the split, it was a split decision, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I thought Canelo had, you know, just won a close fight.
Yeah.
But that, you know, coming after the Mayweather fight is sort of, you know, what a way to sort of exorcise the ghosts of being handily beaten by a slick mover and taking on Aristandi Lara.
Yeah, exactly.
And this fight, not only did he blast Kirkland out, which is probably what was expected, but doing it at a stadium with over 30,000 people watching is a pretty good sign.
It's a good sign that 30,000 turned out in force to watch him, isn't it? It came a week, is it a week? Yeah, it was just a week after Mayweather Pacquiao, which was largely thought to be a disappointment.
Yeah, and I saw a lot of people saying after Alvarez Kirkland, like, oh yeah, this is what Mayweather Pacquiao should have been. It's like, I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm the only person who thinks this. But yeah, it was a spectacular knockout, but I would rather have watched 12 rounds with the two best boxers in the world. Yeah, I know it was quite a technical fight and you weren't seeing bombs exploding. I'd still rather have watched that than...
Would you, rather have watched that than Pacquiao detonate bombs on Mayweather and knock him out in round three? What if that had happened? I think that isn't that what people were getting at? That there was no kind of explosions. But I mean, let's face it, that was never going to be the case, was it? It was never going to be a classic. Like, it was never going to be what would be deemed as one of the greatest fights of all time in terms of Mayweather and Pacquiao, was it?
Yeah. Pacquiao was never going to knock Mayweather out in three rounds.
No, of course not. So Alvarez, his future seems to lie, you would think, at middleweight.
Yeah, because he's been fighting sort of catch weight just above light middle, hasn't he? But he's been fighting at Cotto's weight.
Is that the next step, do you think, that Miguel Cotto, if Cotto gets through Daniel Gill, and as I'm still got a feeling that he might not, I really have, but anyway, so say Cotto gets past Daniel Gill, is that the next fight that they're going to make, do you think, Cotto Alvarez? The negotiations broke down before, because they're trying to bring them together before.
Yeah, so like Golden Boy and Alvarez are keen to make it. Cotto has said publicly, like, you know, that Canelo and Golovkin can wait their turn. I think surely Cotto Alvarez is huge, you know, and especially now after this, surely that's a massive fight, and money would dictate it's got to happen.
Will you give Cotto much chance? I mean, Cotto's reputation really enlivened by his beating of Sergio Martinez last year. Sergio Martinez, I think it was this week, is more or less, to all intents and purposes, said he's probably not going to fight again. His body just can't do it. A lot of people who did not give Cotto a great deal of credit for that Martinez win, did so for that reason, in that Martinez was damaged goods, his body was just not what it was anymore. Do we think that Cotto, against a live opponent like Saul Alvarez, can roll back the years again?
It's not impossible, but yeah, the win over Martinez probably made flattered Cotto a bit, in that Martinez's knee was clearly a factor and his mobility was compromised. But, you know, it's a good fight. It's, you know, got Cotto's experienced, not as physically powerful, but, you know, is Canelo's footwork the greatest? You know, he might struggle with a bit of movement. Canelo looked so devastating. I now think he'd beat Cotto, but I still think it's a proper fight and a hard one to make a confident prediction for. What do you reckon?
I think we'll learn a lot more about what Cotto's got left against Daniel Gill. I'm kind of thinking that perhaps it's against Alvarez. He could end up on the wrong end of a bit of a beating. But I mean, who knows? We've written off Cotto before several times. I mean, certainly after he lost to Pacquiao, we did that, and he came back and he put a really solid run together at light middleweight before moving up to win the middleweight title. The one man, of course, at middleweight, which would be an absolutely wonderful matchup for Alvarez, is Gennady Golovkin. He's fighting this weekend against little-known Willie Monroe Jr. Monroe Jr., don't know that much about him, southpaw. Golovkin has said that he kind of, you know, he's welcome in fighting a southpaw. He says that kind of greats of the past, or, you know, even people like Cotto have fought southpaws and struggled, and he wants to test himself against the southpaw. The last southpaw he fought, I believe, was Proxer, and he had absolutely no problem dismantling him. Right. Do we see, Golovkin is at that level now, where unless he is fighting someone like an Alvarez, anybody he fights, it's going to be a huge upset if he loses. How big would it be of a shock if Willie Monroe Jr. beats Gennady Golovkin this weekend?
It would be a huge shock. But afterwards, everyone would say, "Oh, look, Golovkin had never fought any big names, etc." But I think the thing with Golovkin is he's beaten the guys he's beaten in such outstanding style, and you know, you suspect it's the bigger names who aren't desperate to go in with Golovkin rather than him avoiding anyone. So yeah, it would be a massive upset. So I think it's a case of how good Golovkin looks. You know, he looked excellent against Martin Murray earlier this year. Is Monroe going to be elusive enough to stay away from him and, you know, mess him about? But then Golovkin's so good at sort of hunting down people that, yeah, it could be another sort of, yeah, it could be, yeah, another sort of terrifying display of Golovkin's power.
Golovkin has got that frightening power. He's far from just a slugger, though. The way he puts himself into position to deliver the power shots is so impressive, and certainly he's not impossible to beat. But we mentioned some of the question marks about Joshua, for example, where you know, he hasn't been past three rounds. We're not sure how he'd cope under pressure. Golovkin, to an extent, has kind of answered some of those questions. Certainly against Martin Murray, he looked as dangerous in the 11th round as he did in the first.
Yeah.
He looked as full of energy, as relentless in the 11th as he did in the first.
We've seen him get caught, so we don't, you know, he's not easy to hit, but it looks like he's got a decent chin as well. Didn't he knock Gill out whilst Gill was in the middle of punching him in the face?
Ooh, exactly.
Which is a little bit alarming for anyone out there.
For any prospective opponents.
He can do those kind of freakish things.
Would you, I mean, now that Mayweather-Pacquiao has happened, we've mentioned Golovkin-Mayweather before, how would, Mayweather is clearly, I mean, I'd be astonished if Mayweather-Golovkin was ever to take place. I'd be astonished.
Yeah. And also, from the Mayweather side, you can just say, look, he's, you know, he's a welterweight, if that, like, he makes welterweight easily.
Of course you can. And also, he may say, well, you know, Golovkin, he's just still not that well known. And he's not tip of the tongue household name, is he, Gennady Golovkin?
No, but he
is. What does he need to do to get to a level where Mayweather may look at him, say, in 12 months' time and go, actually, I could make so much money fighting that guy?
Well, surely he needs to just keep doing what he's doing, as in, you know, he's a big ticket seller, you know, so he's got a good turnout last time he fought in California. I know the show in the south of France was a small one, but I think this show he'll bring in, you know, a healthy crowd, so he does sell tickets, he does look devastating, get people talking about him, HBO like him. So if he keeps mowing down these sort of level of opponents he's fighting so far, you know, sooner or later he's going to end up with, you know, with a big name. But maybe we are looking at, you know, the other HBO fighters like Canelo or Cotto, or even Andre Ward. And obviously, like, if Karl Froch fought Golovkin, that, I don't know if it's pay-per-view in the States, but it's a sort of, it's certainly a massive fight.
There's so many good fights out there for Golovkin, isn't there? It's a bit of a shame that we haven't seen him in any of the ones that we've wanted for him as yet. But it's not like he's kind of shying away. It's not like he'll fight. I mean, which is why perhaps there's no kind of outrage over the likes of William Monroe Jr. going in against perhaps the most feared fighter in boxing at the moment, Gennady Golovkin, because Golovkin is busy. He's just busy. He just wants to fight, and he keeps, you know, so he can fight the likes of William Monroe Jr. if it's one of his four or five fights that he has in a year.
Yeah.
So what are we saying? Do we give Monroe any chance at all? How many rounds do you think Monroe goes?
I don't know, because I keep thinking Golovkin can't keep destroying everybody. Sooner or later, there's going to be someone awkward who doesn't look not so great. But maybe Monroe isn't the man to do it. Maybe he'll last five rounds.
I think we just don't know how
Monroe Jr. is going to cope in the face of Golovkin.
But we don't know how durable he is.
Yeah.
Do we? He might be ludicrously durable. But now we need to see another interesting thing on this bill, though. Roman Gonzalez, who in a similar way is fantastic, frightening fighter, technically brilliant, punches like a mule, but no one really knows who he is because he fights down at flyweight. Before that, he was fighting even lower than that. But it's good to see Roman Gonzalez against Edgar Sosa, who is a durable type that could go rounds.
Yeah, maybe this, you know, on HBO and on Box Nation over here, that could be the fight to sort of get Roman Gonzalez in everyone's minds. Everyone after this show could come away from it thinking, you know, wow, look at those two. They're thinking of Gonzalez and Golovkin.
Exactly, Roman Gonzalez, I mean, it was kind of the curse of Ricardo Lopez several years ago in that he was, I mean, different fighter to Roman Gonzalez, but absolutely outstanding and kind of highly respected within the boxing industry, but outside of the boxing industry, nobody really knew who Ricardo Lopez was. And you kind of think perhaps that's the way that Roman Gonzalez's career may pan out, which is no bad thing at all. So we think that, I have to agree with you, I think Golovkin will catch up with Willie Monroe fairly quickly, and it will be done and dusted. Paul Wheeler, the tipster extraordinaire in the boxing news ranks at the moment, has made his pick. Get the magazine, which you can download or buy in newsagents, for his pick. What else is going on, John? Anything else we need to talk about? We're closing in on the 40-minute mark. I'm always conscious
40
of around.
40 minutes.
I'm always conscious that around 40 minutes we might be boring people stupid.
I think that started about 2 minutes in. What, we've gone a whole podcast and barely spoken about Mayweather Pacquiao?
I think that's fair enough. I mean, we meant in Heroes and Villains this week, we did put the question out there, was are you interested in a rematch out of the five editorial team who answer the questions? There was two definitive yes, I want to see it again, and you were one of them, John. You gagging for a sequel to Mayweather Pacquiao?
Yeah, I just need to get back to Vegas, mate. Whatever it takes. But I still think it's just, it is not as big as the first one, but still probably the biggest fight in boxing.
Can you make any argument that Pacquiao would improve? I think we maybe spoke about this last week, some danger going over old ground, but I think that's the biggest thing for me, is that previously you could make a case for Pacquiao. There was some intrigue there. There was so much intrigue, but now we've actually seen them fight, seen how Mayweather nullified Pacquiao more or less completely over the last six rounds, I thought. And okay, there was a shoulder injury, which again we can't be sure what the extent of that shoulder injury was, how much it bothered Manny Pacquiao. Probably only Manny Pacquiao really knows that for sure. But I mean, even if, okay, he's 100% fit, he would likely be 37 years old. He's had a heck of a grueling career, Manny Pacquiao. That's the biggest thing for me why I'm not all for the rematch.
But what if Mayweather improved? What if Mayweather knocked him out? What would happen then?
Well, what would happen? What would happen? There'd be chat that Pacquiao was shot. Pacquiao was too old. Why aren't you fighting that guy again?
But Mayweather's older than Pacquiao.
No, he is, but he hasn't had anything like a punishing career as Pacquiao. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think if it was made quickly and it was all okay, yeah, they're going to fight again in September. We'll get it on, done. The boxing world hasn't got to wait around too long again for it all to happen. There was a sense to me, and don't get me wrong, I was absolutely exhilarated by the whole prospect of Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao fighting. I was excited beyond belief about the thing from the moment that it was announced towards the end of February to the moment that they fought was wonderful. There was a real feel of optimism in the air that these two are eventually going to do it. However, there was also a feel that the rest of box, I can't remember what went on between February and June.
Did anything happen?
Well, exactly.
Does it matter?
Yeah, but we can't, it's not right, it's not fair on boxing, it's not fair on all these other guys that are performing so well, for boxing to kind of just throw all its hopes on Mayweather and Pacquiao one day eventually unleashing this super fight that perhaps the public at large are expecting.
Alright, so we need Canelo Cotto to happen then?
Yeah, Canelo Cotto perhaps. Yeah, something like that. I just think we need, rather than just waiting around now, I feel like boxing waited for so long for Mayweather Pacquiao at the expense perhaps of some other things. And I know that Mayweather has broken all sorts of records, and I am a huge fan of what he does in the ring. I think it's artistry, it's brilliant, it's a lifetime in the making. He's been doing that, he's been boxing since he was a toddler, we're led to believe. But I also think that perhaps, I was reading something somewhere that were saying, right, well, Mayweather's coming to the end of his career, Pacquiao's coming to the end of his career, then what happens to boxing? Well, perhaps boxing gets even stronger because some of the exciting guys that the general public will be kind of asked to watch and asked to hand over money for will be leading the sport. And I think ultimately,
well, the age of Lomachenko is coming.
Lomachenko maybe.
It's happening.
Lomachenko maybe. But I think there's a lot of talent out there that I certainly am not of the opinion that it's all doom and gloom for boxing once Floyd Mayweather walks away. I think it could be quite the opposite. Should we leave it there?
Yeah.
I've been banging on again for ages.
No, that was deep.
Okay.
Other stuff has been going on.
No, it has. Of course it has. Of course it has. But you know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying.
No, it's all right. It's been early. I thought you were asking me for like a news roundup.
Oh, okay. Go on
again,
then. Go on then.
Well, the world in the last couple of days. Scott Quigg, Kiko Martinez in Manchester, July 18. And Anthony Crolla returning from
of
his injury.
Crolla, yeah.
Straight into world, the WBA world title fight, because now Darlys Perez has the title that was stripped from Richard Avril on the same show in Manchester.
That's a potential feel good story, isn't it?
Yeah.
If Anthony Crolla comes back and wins that fight, good grief.
Yeah, just what a story that is.
I mean, because I think if anybody, we've all spoken to Anthony several times, and you know, and he's kind of well known as one of the nicest guys in boxing, and that is absolutely true. And it was so upsetting to hear what had happened to him. I think, was it over Christmas?
Yeah.
And you know, his well-told dream, and you know, potentially his life was in tatters at that point. And so now he's got this world title fight, but it's a big ask to come back from that. I'm surprised that he hasn't had some kind of warm up fight in the meantime.
Yeah. I can see the sort of commercial argument is that this, as in, this would be such a high profile fight.
Yeah.
But physically, it must be tough, because not only did he sustain a head injury, he broke his ankle. You know, and according to his trainer, you know, the ankle was the thing to worry about. But then Joe Gallagher was telling me that on the Saturday, and that's on Sunday morning, that Crolla was running the Great North Run on BBC TV, so it couldn't have been that bad.
True.
But obviously it was bad, but they got it fixed. So yeah, you'd think, like, just in sporting terms, a couple of warm-ups would be no bad thing. But this is, it's quite a big event, isn't it? The Manchester Arena.
Crolla's going to be bang up for this. I remember speaking to Anthony Crolla after he'd beaten John Watson for the British title, and he was on cloud nine, absolute cloud nine. He'd won the British title and dreamed of winning the British title from a young age.
Was he the underdog then, stepping up to lightweight?
Yes, he was.
Well?
Yeah, yeah, he was. He was. So you can only imagine how much this means to him. Going back to the Scott Quigg fight against Kiko Martinez. So few people fancying Kiko Martinez for this fight. I don't at all.
I suppose if you think Scott Quigg is vulnerable defensively, then you could think Kiko Martinez pouring it on could hurt him. I think Scott is, you know, he's tactically very good. I don't think he's going to be there for Kiko to hit. But I think it's going to be an exciting fight, because Scott Quigg has got some serious power, and Kiko Martinez comes forward to make a fight. So it's, you know, it's a pretty good fight. You know, obviously we all want Quigg Frampton, but it's sort of, you know, if he looked better against Kiko than Carl Frampton did, that again helps build towards the big one. Either way, yeah, it's, you know, it's a good fight on a good show.
What else?
Terry Flanagan has got a shot at the WBO, the vacant WBO lightweight title.
Who against?
Zepeda.
Right.
But that is, so they've come to an agreement. He's going to have home advantage. We don't know the date and the venue yet. But again, another British lightweight going for a world title. Big show. There's a show in Liverpool at the end of June. We already mentioned Callum Smith, Christopher Rabras. It's a good fight on that. But then it's also, that show's also going to have David Price. David Price is homecoming.
Is he fighting Usinov?
I don't know who he's. I think we're recording this on Friday morning, so I think by this afternoon we'll know his opponent. Tony Belli is going to be on that show. I'm pretty sure that Rocky Fielding, Brian Vera, is going to be on that.
It's always good to, I mean, fight cards like that where there's a lot of guys from Liverpool. There's nothing, I've said it before, there's nothing quite like experiencing a card like that in Liverpool, and I've had so many good times up in the Echo Arena.
Other than a big night in Birmingham.
Well, yeah.
I've walked down Broad Street at 2:30 in the morning.
I've crawled down Broad Street at 2:30 in the morning in the past.
You've crawled down Broad Street at 2:30 in the afternoon.
Oh, you know me too well.
But I haven't brought up the big news of the week.
Which is?
I'm now the online editor.
You are now the online editor.
And even bigger than that, I should be congratulating you.
Yeah,
you're the new editor of Boxing News.
I am the new editor of Boxing News. It's
how do you feel?
Very, very, very honoured. It's really quite hard for me to get my head around at the moment. It's something that I've dreamed of for many, many years. I do talk about it in the column this week, and you know, Boxing News has always been very, very close to my heart, and I just hope that I can do the brand, the magazine, the title justice, because it's one heck of a publication, and I hope that I can take it from strength to strength. We are at the moment, just so that people are aware, at the moment we're working on a new website, which will take up a lot of my time over the next few weeks, but certainly in the summer months I hope to kind of make my presence known in the magazine. Certainly don't intend to change too much, but there's a few little things that I'd like to kind of make my own, as it were. Things will slowly start to happen, but I'm very, very optimistic about Boxing News's future, as I am the sports. And yours as well, John.
What?
Online editor, I'm optimistic about your future as well, pal.
That sounds ominous. But I think
it's a wonderful opportunity, though. Joking apart, it's a wonderful opportunity for you. The website is going from strength to strength, and you know, you're the top man for the job.
Oh, Matt, you're too kind. But anyway, I think the Boxing News fans, readers, need to get to know the real Matt Christie. So I think we should do a 60-second interview with you.
Not now, we're not.
Why not? It'll be so good. It'll take 60 seconds.
It won't take 60 seconds.
Go on.
All right, well, maybe we can edit it out if it all goes wrong.
How could it possibly go wrong?
It might do.
Okay.
When did you think of this plan?
Just now.
Oh, brilliant.
I'm winging it. So, when and why did you get into boxing?
I was pretty young. I can't remember which fight it was, but I remember just kind of being fascinated by some boxing on the television. When I was a kid, apparently I used to like motor racing. I'm not a big fan of motor racing anymore, but I used to like motor racing, and I used to like boxing, and I would sit quietly and watch boxing. Then when I was about 8, I bought my first ever gift voucher, £10 gift voucher, I believe, for WH Smith's. I bought the Pictorial History of Boxing, which is a fantastic history book, and I just lost myself reading all about the history of boxing.
All right. And who is your favourite all-time fighter? I think I know the answer to this.
Well, Smoking Bert Cooper.
Wasn't <a play. laughs> No, Ian Napa.
No, I think Muhammad Ali was the first one that I was absolutely fascinated with, and that was as a consequence of that book that I just mentioned. So then I did read so many books on Muhammad Ali and watch so many films, and my favourite VHS was in fact The Greatest Fights of Muhammad Ali, which I used to watch and then rewind and then watch and rewind and watch and rewind. And but yeah, bit of a soft spot for old Smoking Bird as well.
Okay, what's the best fight you've seen? This can be ringside or just on TV ever in your life. Or if it's easier to say ringside.
Smoking Bert Cooper against Michael
Mora. Okay. personal career highlight.
Probably this moment right now, yeah.
I don't know who your toughest opponent has been, so we're going to have to skip past that. Toughest article you've ever written?
When I first started, there was an article I did with Joshua Clotty. I think I'd only been here about a month or two, and Tris asked me to get in touch with Joshua Clotty, and with hindsight, maybe he tried to get in Joshua Clotty once. Clotty wasn't awkward, but there was a bit of a language barrier, and there were various things that I needed to clarify, so I had to phone him back a couple of times. With it being my first feature in the magazine, I was kind of desperate for it to be absolutely perfect and everything else. And there was on more than one occasion, I think I woke him up and he wasn't happy with me. And it was just, it was a long-winded process getting answers from Joshua Clotty.
Okay. What are your best and worst attributes as a writer?
As a writer? I don't know, I suppose my worst is I can bang on a bit.
Yeah, but you use damn good adjectives, sir. Your writing tip?
My writing tip is to read and write as much as possible.
Okay. Your favourite meal / restaurant? Is it a cheeky Nando's?
No, I do like a cheeky Nando's. My favourite meal is got to be steak. It really is steak. It's a good, rare steak.
What would you have with the steak?
It's going to have to be some chips, but they're going to have to be decent chips. Got to be decent chips.
Thick
some
chips.
I want some mushrooms as well, please. I'm not bothered about the onions, but I'd like some mushrooms cooked in butter to go with my steak. No peppercorn sauce, thanks.
Bernays sauce?
No sauce with it, thanks.
Your best friends in boxing?
That'd be you, John.
Better be. What other writer would you like to be?
What other writer would I like to be? The best of my, I think the best writers is probably, not that I want to be, don't want to be anybody else.
Oh, come on, Matt.
The guys that I admire the most are the likes of Donald McRae, when Hugh McElveny used to write about boxing regularly, that was always an absolute treat to read him. And in fact, whatever Hugh McElveny writes about, it's worth reading.
What was the last film / TV show you saw?
The last TV show was probably Coronation Street. But the last TV show that I thought was exceptional was Fortitude. And the last film, I must have watched them on the way back from Las Vegas, and I can't remember. I can't remember what I watched on the way back, and I was very tired. I was in almost like a zombie state, and I just couldn't sleep. So I was watching stuff. But I enjoyed, on the way over there, I enjoyed Birdman a lot, and I enjoyed also The Theory of Everything.
I tried to watch Birdman on the way back. I couldn't understand a word of it, but then fell asleep. I already know the answer to this, but who would play you in a film of your life?
Well, you would say Jason Statham. I think that's flattering me somewhat.
Okay.
Who would play me in a film?
Marlon Brando at the end of Apocalypse Now?
Probably Marlon Brando at the end of Apocalypse Now, yeah. Or
That's just an insight into life and boxing news now.
My favourite actor, though, is Jack Nicholson. But I was struggling for a likeness with old Jackie Boy.
Okay. Have you ever been starstruck?
Yeah, all the time.
All the time.
All the time, yeah. In this working, having this job, yeah, all the time.
When was the last time you cried, Matt? Probably so many times, it's hard to remember.
The last time I cried, I don't know. I am quite an emotional soul, if I'm telling the truth.
The last time you nearly cried,
the Mayweather Pacquiao weigh-in, and I nearly started. Yeah. I think I've held it together since then, so certainly the last emotional moment.
The best advice you've received?
The best advice I have received was probably when I was at university, and I think a lecturer said, look, if you really do want to work in the boxing industry, and more or less it's probably unlikely, but start gearing everything you're doing now to that industry, so that your final year's project should be to do with boxing and everything else, and just get it in your head that's what you're going to do, and that'll give you the best chance of getting there.
All right. Worst rumour about yourself? And I've started a few about you, Matt.
The worst rumour I don't know. I don't think there's any rumours about me.
They'll be coming around soon enough. Finally, tell us something not many people know about you.
Something that not many people know about me. I once, when I was...
Do I want to know the answer to this?
I don't know. When I was about... I think I was about 14 or 15, I drank a shot of Brut aftershave.
Okay. Well, on that bombshell, I don't even want to know why.
Okay, we've been talking for an hour now. That really. That. Cheers for that, John.
Anytime.
But no, thanks everybody for listening to us. Sorry, it's been a little bit longer this week than normal. And thanks to everybody that's got in touch and wished me well in my new role. It was really overwhelming, really, really humbling, really touching, and it's it means the world, it really does. And we'll be back next week.